Hello and welcome to the CISS podcast. This is the On the Spot series by China Forum. In this series, we return to the platform of international forums and webinars where leading minds in academia, government, business, technology, and media deliver novel, collaborative responses to the global issues of the day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CISS podcast. I'm Da Wei, Director of the Center for International Security and Strategy at Tsinghua University. In this episode, we will bring you to the U.S.-China People's Dialogue 2025, an event CISS co-organized with National Committee of U.S.-China Relations in Los Angeles, November 16 to 19, 2025. This event brought together participants from academia, the media, business, and the broader society from both China and the United States. Our goal was to identify the challenges in people-to-people exchanges between the two countries and try to produce some fresh idea to improve it. We are honored to be joined by four distinguished guests whose voice has long shaped the landscape of U.S.-China engagement. Steve Orleans, President of National Committee on U.S.-China Relations. Tian Wei, host of CGTN, China Global TV Network. Robert Daly, former director of the Kissinger Institute at the Wilson Center. And Yang Bin, Vice Chancellor of Tsinghua University Council. Together, we will explore what people-to-people dialogue looks like in practice, what barriers stand in the way, and how individuals, students, professionals, travelers, creators can push the relationship toward a more hopeful future. First, let's hear from Steve Orleans, whose decades of commitment to improving U.S.-China relations offer invaluable insight into the power of long-term engagement. Now here's our conversation with Steve Orleans. Steve, thank you very much. First of all, thank you for working with us on this people-to-people exchanges, the People's Dialogue. So,
pleasure to work with you. Pleasure to work with Tsinghua. Great pleasure to work with Da Wei.
Big thank you. And for a very long time, for decades, you are a practitioner for people-to-people exchanges between China and the U.S. So my first question is very simple. Can you use a very, like, use a word or phrase or a short sentence to describe your understanding about current status of China-U.S. people-to-people ties?
Continuing but challenged.
Okay, continue. Why? Why continued but
challenged? Continuing, we still have, the data came out yesterday, we'll still have 265,000 Chinese students in the United States. That's now down. We had a few years ago 390, yes. And then last year we had 290 down to 265. So it's challenging. You know, Chinese students are deciding, and that's really a fundamental part of people-to-people exchange as students. So it's we're seeing reducing numbers, but it's still continuing, and that's important. U.S. students going to China has dropped virtually, you know, it's now below 1,000.
A little bit higher than 1,000 now, like 1,200, 1,000.
No, the data the embassy is giving is less than 1,000.
Yes.
So we have slightly, but in any case, even if it's 1,200, it was 18,000 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So that's also continuing barely, but challenged. Investment, which has really been a thriving part of people-to-people, is again, continuing, but it's challenged. Mm-hmm. It's challenged by capital controls that the Chinese government has on Chinese investment into the United States. It's challenged by U.S. government restrictions. It's now being challenged by state government restrictions on Chinese investment in the United States. China, it's kind of slightly moving in opposite directions. In the meetings that we've had with Xi Jinping, he has emphasized that the treatment of foreign businesses is going to be the same as the treatments of Guangqie and Mingyingqie, so state-owned enterprises. And,
国民待遇. Yeah.
You know, it will all be equal. And that seems to be happening. So we're seeing a slight pickup of U.S. investment in China, and that is very fundamental.
So, yeah, you mentioned several, you know, factors why we have challenging reactions, realities. I think probably the major one is the political relations. So, the two presidents just had a very successful meeting in Busan in Korea, and probably they will have some meetings next year. So with this short-term stabilization of the political environment, do you think that the people-to-people tie between our two countries will have a window of opportunity?
I think there is a window of opportunity. We've seen, based on the very successful meeting that President Xi and President Trump had, you know, we've seen a stabilization. Now, what I hope what happens in the next half year, let's say, is we begin to see more progress. Mm-hmm. We begin to see clarification of visa issues. We begin to see allowing of American scholars back into China.
What do you mean by clarification of visa issues?
Well, in other words, we've seen an uptick in rejection of Chinese student visas into the United States. Mm-hmm. We hope that you know, the reasons for it clarify. When I say a clarification, that a student who is making a decision, am I going to study computer science at MIT or am I going to study at Tsinghua, that mm-hmm. they can be clear whether they're going to get the fees or not. So the clarification is important because students are making
to
that.
To know the boundary.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, some of these things. Okay. And that's true on investment, too. Let's know what areas we mm-hmm. can invest in and what areas we cannot invest in. Mm-hmm. In my view, you know, what we've seen over the last 10 years is a kind of an over-securitization of criteria determining whether an investment can be made. Mm-hmm. I think what the two presidents need to do is instruct the next level down. All right, these areas are off limits. They're clearly going to be areas that's off limits. That's okay. But those areas should be clearly defined. So when over my career I've sat in boardrooms, I needed to know, is this an area I can invest in? Is this an area I can't invest in? Or is this something I need to talk to government about? If I need to talk to government about it, that's not great. Because that's going to be an impediment to making the decision to invest. I don't want to spend $10 million getting ready to invest just to have government say, no, you can't make that investment. So I think the lack of clarity leads to a decrease in investment. And my belief is investment is a critical part of P2P.
So what other signals do you think the two presidents can send before their summit or during the next 6 months?
Well, during the summit, I think they should each state, you know, that Xi Jinping should state that travel to the United States is good. It's Chinese people should go. President Trump should
encouraging Chinese to visit the U.S.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Similarly, President Trump should say it's okay to go to China. It's okay to visit China. You know, you're going to be safe. All this is good. So each make positive statements about two-way travel, because obviously two-way travel is what people-to-people exchanges is all about.
Mm-hmm. So if they do that, do you think there are some long-term underlying factors still preventing us from having, you know, better P2P ties? Do you think it's a purely political one, or there are other things that we cannot solve in a short or even medium run?
You know, the politics relating to U.S.-China relations has created a high level of doubt among people in both sides of how much they should interact with the other side. And what we need to do as people who work on U.S.-China relations is to assure people that it's okay and it's productive. If we can't do that, it's going to remain difficult. And it has to be done on many, many, many levels. It has to be done in academia. It has to be done in media. You know, the Chinese government needs to allow American journalists in large numbers back into China. The U.S. government needs to allow state-owned media to operate in the United States. Those things should be obvious. They should be easy, but they're not. It's been years since we've seen the deterioration in the numbers of Chinese journalists in the United States, in the numbers of U.S. journalists in China. And we need to fix that, because in truth, the more journalists there are, the better the coverage is going to be. If there are only 12 American journalists in China, it's hard for them to have good coverage. So we need to see progress in those areas, in academia, in media, in two-way investment, in two-way trade. All of these things, you know, will make people-to-people relations stronger.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Steve, not only for accepting our interview, but also for your long-time partnership and also your effort to increase, to enhance the people-to-people ties.
It's one of the great pleasures of my job to be able to work with you.
Yeah, let's continue to fight together. Yeah, thank you.
继续斗争.
Next, we turn to Tian Wei, one of China's most prominent media voices, who has long focused on global communication, cross-cultural understanding, and the human stories behind the international relations. Let's move on to the interview with Tian Wei.
Okay, Tian Wei, it's good, really great pleasure to have the opportunity here to interview you. So usually
Professor
it's always...
Professor Da, so good to see you.
Yeah. Usually it's always you interview me in studio in Beijing, but it's really happy I can interview here as a revenge here in Los Angeles.
I can see the happiness of yours, turning the table.
Yeah, exactly. So the topic we have been discussed in past two or three days is people-to-people ties. Mm-hmm. So can you use one word or maybe one phrase to describe your understanding of the current status of China-U.S. people-to-people ties?
The phrase people-to-people exchanges brings me a lot of words at this moment. But if you ask me to choose one, I would say with certainty that is window opportunity. Mm. Window opportunity. We are at a very critical stage in which there was an earlier meeting between the heads of state between the two countries.
So you mean the Pusan meeting?
China,
yeah,
and the United States at the Pusan airport. Yeah. I was there on the sideline of this meeting, uh-huh, and certainly felt the ambience change. Mm-hmm. Just like that, mm-hmm, overnight, like magic. Mm-hmm. Certainly that shows the leadership's interaction and diplomacy, as we say in China, is so critical. But in order to build that and also to lay the groundwork for future, this is really the window opportunity for people-to-people exchanges. And I hope we can really catch this opportunity because there are a lot of goodwill people from both sides that, mm-hmm, are working very hard, mm-hmm, for the earlier meeting to happen,
yeah,
and certainly to follow up on the earlier meetings.
So if we can grab this opportunity, how far can we go in your view?
I think there are basic things that we can do. Now we are in a closed-door session, mm-hmm, on U.S.-China people-to-people dialogue.
Yeah.
This is a joint project, by the way. You're laughing right now.
Yes.
I know this is a joint project between your center, CISS, mm-hmm, and also National Committee of U.S.-China Relations. What I want to say is you guys closed us in,
yes,
indoor.
Yes.
And say,
drag you from Beijing to Los Angeles.
Exactly. And squeeze us and say, come up with good ideas. Mm-hmm. And I think this is wonderful, mm-hmm, because it is not, you can see the efforts from everyone, mm-hmm, genuinely, mm-hmm, to bring out what they have been thinking about for years when the relationship was falling below the ice point. And one thing I think everybody can agree on, that is at least to make sure the peoples on both sides can feel safe, mm-hmm, and happy, mm-hmm, and even willing to travel to the other country.
Yeah.
After all, we've been doing that for decades.
Yeah, that's a kind of bottom line. I mean, at least to make people feel safe when travel to the other side.
Indeed. Yeah. And by the way, there are still many students, for, mm-hmm, example, coming from China in the United States.
Yeah.
The bottom line is make them feel, yeah, safe, mm-hmm, and happy to study in the campus. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, to make the ambience right for more young Americans to travel to China. Earlier, mm-hmm. the Chinese president had this initiative of mm-hmm. having American students to visit China, mm-hmm. but they visit maybe a few weeks. Can that be extended to yeah. longer term?
Yeah.
Can there be more students exchanges programs? Mm-hmm. So even we did that, you know, decades ago, but that was very different circumstances.
Sure.
Now, do we have the courage and the tools mm-hmm. and the wills and the guts to do it? Not again, but yeah. anew. So that's, I think, the basic thing we can do.
Good, great. Thank you very much. So you are an anchor.
And please, Professor, work hard for that.
Yeah, I will. I will. I will try to bring my students to the U.S.
And the other way around.
Yeah. So you are the anchor at CGTN, major media, Chinese media, which actually try to introduce or bring China, bridge China under the international society. So in your working experience and also maybe in your personal experience, do you have any story that you can share with us related to people-to-people exchanges that you feel, you know, you feel... maybe it's a pleasant experience, maybe it's some frustrating experience, but can you give us some story about your experience?
Absolutely. And I am a product of the time.
Uh-huh.
So is everybody.
Uh-huh.
So I still remember very clearly studying in a small university in Beijing for my language training. And that was one of those universities in China for the very first time opening to foreign students mm-hmm. as roommates.
Okay.
As we knew...
You shared dorm with
another
students?
Foreign student.
Great.
As we know, in a lot of campuses, there were foreign students program, but yeah. usually they live in the same building
exactly.
of their own.
Yeah.
While the Chinese
a nicer
students...
building. Yeah.
Sometimes, you yeah. know, with the hot water and everything
yeah.
of those times.
Yeah.
So, but... The place where I studied actually have the Chinese students volunteer to compete to be roommates
Good.
With mm-hmm. an international or exchange student. They might be coming from the United States or Africa or elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an American roommate.
Mm.
And I remembered the great times we spent together,
mm-hmm.
Not only on campus, but also... in the bars.
Yeah, so you make friends. Yeah.
Right? You do make friends that way. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people have those kind of similar experiences, whether in China or elsewhere. But even more importantly, when I work as a correspondent in the United States, I went to one of the weddings
mm-hmm.
of my roommate's friends
okay.
who live in the same building with us at the time.
Wow.
And she came back from the U.S. military.
Okay.
To get married.
Uh-huh.
And so it was a very interesting experience for me traveling to an inland province, so
yes.
to speak, of the United States,
uh-huh.
be with the family.
You mean a state?
South Carolina.
Okay.
And also to go to a wedding
mm-hmm.
of my friends who just retired from the U.S. military. So it's a lot of interesting, exotic factors combined,
mm-hmm.
but that certainly broke... a lot of stereotypes for me of the time. But of course, I know, time have changed. A lot of the possibilities earlier might not be possible now. But I do think under the new circumstances, as long as there's mutual respect,
mm-hmm.
as long as there's still genuine belief that together we can make a safer world,
mm-hmm.
because as long as we feel safer with one another, China and the United States, we can have a safer world. At least that's one of the factors. So I think that is still important today.
Mm-hmm.
So I really encourage anyone who can have a personal experience for American Chinese or any other cultures to go and explore it. And don't feel that we are strong now, we don't have to, or we are weak, I don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
Just be out there and you will be a different person, transformed. I guarantee that.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Professor, to make this conversation possible.
Thank you.
Thank you. We are shaking hands right now. Just for our listeners who cannot see us.
Following that, we are joined by Robert Daly, a veteran observer of bilateral ties, whose deep understanding of cultural and societal dynamics bring essential context to the discussion. Let's now hear from Robert Daly.
Okay, so great, Robert. Thank you for accepting our interview. So I'm very, very, really happy to see you here in Los Angeles.
Well, we've seen each other all over the world. This is the first time I've seen you in California.
Yeah, exactly. So we spent 2 or 3 days together discussing this people-to-people, China-US people-to-people ties. Basically, can you use maybe one word or one phrase or very short sentence to describe, in your belief, the current status of China-US people-to-people ties?
In most areas, these ties are disintegrating. Mm-hmm. And the people of the United States and China, I worry, are becoming alienated from each other.
Mm-hmm. So can you, this is a very, I will say, you have very sober but not very optimistic assessment of this. Can you give us a few like examples or cases? Why do you think it's disintegrated?
Well, first I want to make clear that I believe this is a tragedy. I have been an engager with China for 40 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Since I've been working on this. And I have benefited tremendously from people-to-people ties, sure, as have millions of people in both countries, as have many institutions. So mm-hmm. when I say this, I don't say it in a triumphant way. I don't think this is a good thing.
Yeah.
But we, in fact, do see in almost every region that there is less interaction between institutes of higher education.
Mm-hmm.
The foreign NGO law in China drove out most of the NGOs. Mm. There aren't many Chinese NGOs in the United States. We are suspicious of each other's journalists. Mm. We are suspicious of each other's countries. Mm. And even tourists have, after a long period in which we were fascinated by each other, have largely stopped traveling.
Yes.
And so there's very little left. There's very little, you say in Chinese, liangdian. You know, there's I don't see a positive, positive aspects are hard to find. There's still some activity going on, but it's a small number of people.
Mm-hmm. After the pandemic, do you think the trend is continue or you see some recovery?
So it actually started before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I think that it started around 2010 when there were a lot of reports.
So in the past 15 years.
15 years. There were a lot of reports beginning around 2010 about terrible air pollution in China.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which was, of course, true.
Mm-hmm.
But there were also lots of wonderful things in China, too. But there were a lot of reports in the American media, and young people didn't want to go to China, and their parents didn't want them to go.
Mm-hmm.
Then trade war, then pandemic, all in the midst of a worsening U.S.-China relationship, which many people in both countries think is something like a new type of Cold War. Now, there's a debate about how to talk about that and whether that's appropriate or not. But there are an awful lot in China. There are a lot of bad messages about America and Americans. And in America, there are a lot, probably even more, bad messages about China as a country and what Chinese in America may be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so how can we try to build back when there is so much distrust?
Mm.
And then there's another factor, which we talked about these few days, which is deeper cultural factors.
Mm-hmm.
China, because China now is, not only is it a developed economy, but it's a mature and self-sufficient culture and society.
Mm-hmm.
So in the 80s and 90s, when China was poor, it was developing, it always had a lot of pride and confidence, but it didn't have a feeling of self-sufficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And so it naturally looked to outside models, especially to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And now, for very good reasons, because China has met a lot of its goals, it's self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is it self-sufficient, but it also feels under constant attack from the United States. And we know the reasons for that. It's a reasonable way for many people in China to feel, I think.
Mm.
So self-sufficiency and then kind of a defensive crouch. The United States is a different case, as you know. We've talked about this, the kinds of confusion, cultural, political, in the United States that makes it very hard to look out at other countries. There's also more suspicion of globalization in the States. It used to be that Americans who spoke Chinese could get jobs in China. That's mostly not true anymore.
Yes.
So in part, it's our success that has hurt people-to-people relations, and it's in part geopolitics.
So, yeah, so I think you had you gave me a very profound analysis. It's not only because the political factor.
No.
Yeah, for example, the President Xi and the President Trump just met in Busan. It was a pretty successful meeting, and probably they will meet next year for several times. Many people believe next year's overall bilateral relations will at least be stabilized, even improved. But you don't think, if that's true, you don't think that will bring us a more, successful
TPP? It could, but I'm not sure if there's a rapprochement. I'm not sure that it lasts. I'm not sure that you can take it to the bank.
Yeah.
And also, we need to, these guys are the presidents of their respective governments.
Sure.
They're not the presidents of American and Chinese culture. They're not the presidents of Chinese and American society.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can't necessarily change the views of their people,
yeah.
which on both sides now, there's quite a bit of suspicion. And there are also injured feelings.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my Chinese friends feel that because of China's success, America has been punching China in the face every day for the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
They feel something like that.
Mm.
Americans have a sense that they are under attack by China, that China wishes America harm or that wishes American systems harm. And Americans have reasons to think those things too. I understand why people in both countries feel this way. I mean, this is one of the reasons that I always enjoy meeting with you, because you're able to have conversations like this and say these things.
Thank you.
In a way that isn't personally accusatory.
Yeah, sure. Right?
Never is. It's just these are facts, and we can both recognize them and discuss them. And so I'm not sure that if Trump says that President Xi is his best friend, President Xi never says these things about Donald Trump. He just sort of smiles and nods.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's going to change a lot of American minds in a major way.
But if we believe next year is because some other people I interviewed believe that we are facing a window of opportunity in next year. So maybe there are some opportunities. What can we do?
So there can be progress. What I would like to see the leaders do is open the door wider so that the people of China and America can individually and organically re-engage with each other.
Can you give me some?
I'll give you a very specific example that I would love to see our leaders do in April on the red carpet.
Yes.
I would like to see Donald Trump himself and Xi Jinping himself say that it is safe for their people to travel to the other country.
Mm-hmm.
Say that it is safe and that it is a good thing and that they welcome visitors. And even more specifically, it is safe for students and tourists to travel to the other country.
Mm-hmm.
That shouldn't be a hard signal to send. If you can send that signal, then I think you will see some response from institutions and individual people, because Americans and Chinese both, for understandable reasons, have concerns about their physical safety. I'm not talking about big S security in the relationship. Small S safety.
Yeah.
They're concerned about that. The threats to safety have been exaggerated in both countries, in my view, but they're widespread and people are genuinely concerned. And I think they could say it's safe and it's a good thing. That's all they have to do.
And also be respected. I mean, traveling to the other country, go through customer and the border control.
So for Customs and Border Patrol and a lot of scholars, including one of the ones sitting at this table, has had trouble with all of these issues. But again, if the presidents say this, it gives permission to the bureaucracies.
Yeah.
It gives permission to politicians in their own parties. It gives permission to university presidents, to tourist companies, to change. You've got to try to change that framework. And we're not saying there's no problem in U.S.-China relations.
Mm-hmm.
There are many problems in U.S.-China relations. That's why you and I have jobs.
Yes.
But we can at least say that it is safe and good that students and tourists go.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a very big breakthrough.
Okay. Anything else?
I'll settle for just that. If I just get this one thing, I'll be very happy.
Great. Okay. So thank you very much, Robert, for taking your time after dinner, after a few glasses of wine, still willing to talk to us.
It is always good to see you and your colleagues.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Finally, we speak with Professor Yang Bin, whose leadership in international education has supported numerous initiatives that bring young people and academic communities from both countries closer together. Please enjoy our discussion with Professor Yang Bin.
Okay, so Yang Laoshi, Professor Yang, it's really great pleasure to interview you here in Los Angeles. So you are an educator working in Tsinghua University for a very long time.
Sure.
And actually you are in the front line of the people-to-people Thai. Mm-hmm. So can you use one word or maybe one phrase to evaluate, to describe your understanding of current status of China-US people-to-people ties?
So thank you for having me here. In my feeling, I think now the people-to-people relationship between the two countries is promising,
mm-hmm.
especially, you know, currently we are in California.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly 2 years and 2 days ago, President Xi Jinping announced his very important 50,000 in 5 years initiative, mm-hmm. which has been a great pillar
yeah.
for China-US, the improvement of the China-US relationship.
Mm-hmm.
The people-to-people relation is a foundation of the relationship of two countries, especially for the younger generation, the students from middle school, high schools, and for colleges and for postgraduates. One specific observation I have, when I receive those Harvard MBA students to visit Tsinghua University to mingle with their counterparts, the Tsinghua SEM MBA students,
mm-hmm.
Just half day
mm-hmm.
mingling,
mm-hmm.
many American MBA students changed their view than before.
Oh, when was that happen? That
actually twice now,
twice.
Early May mm-hmm. Each year.
Okay.
They self-organized this event.
Okay.
It's a study trip
mm-hmm.
before they graduate from business school.
So they came to China this May too, this year?
Yeah,
okay.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then they visit Beijing, mm-hmm. Tsinghua University,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, Shanghai and Chengdu.
Mm-hmm.
So for a 10 days trip. When they visit Beijing, not just to visit Tsinghua and talk to our students, faculty members, but also visit Xiaomi
okay.
and other leading high-tech
companies. Yes.
Kind of an open eyes
uh-huh.
Experience.
Yes.
And let many American students think twice about their, you know, perception
mm-hmm.
regarding the China-US relationship and how they can contribute in the future for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I shared with those students my you know, experience as a beneficiary role from the China-US collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
So I was international faculty fellow in 2002 to 2003,
mm-hmm.
Spent 1 year and more at MIT Sloan School
mm-hmm.
developing leadership and ethics course
mm-hmm.
In collaboration with my host professor in MIT Sloan.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, in Chinese business education, no leadership ethics course were taught. I was kind of the first of this.
So you also experienced that that kind of eye-opening
definitely.
You know, experience. Yeah.
At that time, just you know, Enron and WorldCom,
yes.
you know, occurred, and people didn't trust the business leaders
mm-hmm.
and the giant corps, and you know. I work with my host professor, co-wrote some Chinese-related cases
mm-hmm.
and also co-developed the course for Chinese MBA.
Mm-hmm.
Then not just Tsinghua, and also I organize some workshop to teach my colleagues or share with my colleagues in other business schools.
Yes.
So those kind of programs help a lot for the development of Chinese business education. Mm-hmm. So I'm in my experience, we should memorize this history and to reflect what we can do for the future of the China and the U.S. Relationship. Since 2012, I was involved or engaged in the founding of the Schwarzman College.
Yeah.
I was then the Deputy Dean of Tsinghua School of Economics and Management. Then President Chen Jining asked me to be a kind of a volunteer to help discuss the potential program design with my counterparts in Harvard Business School, the Warren McFarlane and Bill Kirby.
Okay.
So I observed the whole process of the establishment of Schwarzman College. Now, I think it's a kind of flagship program for the two countries.
Yeah.
And Tsinghua is so proud of being the host university of this program. Every year, we have 150 students from all over the world. 40% of them are American citizens. And during their 1 year study at Tsinghua, I think they know China much, much deeper, especially through the various very special designed deep dive practice.
That's visiting different places in China, right?
Yeah.
I mean, deep dive.
Yeah. And also they do the shadowing for the local leaders and learn the routine life of a Chinese.
So that means they will follow the local leader, spend 1 day, right?
One or 2 days.
Yes.
And also visit a company or a local administrative unit for a whole week.
That's a great idea.
They kind of realize what's a leadership style for Chinese, low level administrators or government officials.
Yes.
What do they mean? Chairman Mao talk about serve the people.
Yes.
And why they have this kind of a performance competition, how we can make the economy, local economy better and make my subordinates grow up.
Yes.
And also serve the whole organizational purpose much better.
Yeah.
Something like that. It's a kind of a 24/7 contribution to their organization, and also the whole family, not just the government official itself, himself or herself. It's a whole family support is a contribution.
Yes.
Yeah. That's okay. Very Chinese way.
Yeah. And next year it will. Schwarzman College will be the 10th anniversary of Schwarzman College.
Would be a great event in the coming April.
And we have how many graduates from America we have now so far?
So the total number of the alumni would be 1,300.
Yeah.
So then 40%.
Yeah, okay. Maybe 500 American graduates.
And the college invites all the alumni coming back.
That's great.
And 90% of them, they say, they reply, yes.
Great,
yeah.
Great.
So in the end of the next April would be a great reunion.
Yes.
And a great opportunity, for Tsinghua to kind of educate those alumni again.
Yes,
We design a whole week event academic forum,
yeah,
but also leadership sharing among those alumni.
Yes, yeah.
That's very important because for the two cohorts,
yeah,
during those COVID-19 period, they couldn't either came
to...
They were online.
Yeah, one cohort was online, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I know one of the students who spent the whole year, I mean, the whole course online, but then later he was invited. The whole cohort was invited to return to Tsinghua campus after the pandemic, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Many of the Schwarzman alumni, after they graduate, they pursue public service jobs. Some of them, I know, work in, the international organizations and philanthropy organizations or some not-for-profit organizations. That's the original design of that program is quite a servant leadership or global leadership. Not just the Schwarzman College, but also many other we call globalization efforts at Tsinghua University make China and U.S. Relationship closer, healthier. Especially during last 2 years, we received lots of, 50,000 in 5 years initiative participants. We gave them a warm welcome, and also we gave them free time to share, mingle, exchange with our own students. It's also an education for our own students.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the future, I think if we can have some, not just in person, but also some maybe a virtual exchange, it's also useful. Some classroom, I think it could be a AM, PM classroom. You know, maybe AM at Tsinghua,
yes,
but PM in American University.
Yes.
So 30 same year students from both countries discuss one specific issue, exchange ideas, debate in a constructive way.
Yeah, actually, last semester I tried one, the PM-AM thing. Students from, graduate students from one university here in the States, they joined the class on Friday night, Friday evening, and the Chinese students joined the class on their Saturday morning. So that's I found that's the most convenient time for the both two sides. So we will repeat it maybe next semester.
But this people-to-people dialogue, you as a co-organizer,
yes,
working closely with your American counterparts, I think it's very helpful. I learn a lot from the very deep discussion with other participants, especially two things. One is how and the importance we should work closely, especially in the AI governance area. You know, AI is not a single country issue.
Yeah.
Unlike public health, AI develop so quickly and uncertain.
Yes.
And without collaboration between the two giants and the most advanced in AI development, I think could be some out of control risk.
Yes.
For AI's, not AGI or AS, ASI's development. That's one thing. Another one is, could we do something to help the state leaders meeting more solid and more substantial? I realized the workshop, all the participants work as one task force yes. together, speak, you know, very honestly and very pragmatic to propose something they believe and also they think they can contribute. That's the very, very, not, I shouldn't say rare, but make me feel very warm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think for your center, CISS, should continue to do this kind of event. Let me say, in-person conversation, much stronger than virtual meetings.
Yes, sure.
After dialogue, I mean the panels and speaking sessions, the dining time
yes.
sessions.
Or coffee break.
Maybe. Yeah, coffee break. Very, very make people open their hearts
yes.
and speak what they really mean. I think for this kind of event, it's a backbone for people-to-people relationship for the two countries.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much, Professor Yang. Mm. We will continue to work on this program and fight for the people-to-people tie. And also thank you for your effort in your position in Tsinghua to contribute a lot to this people-to-people tie. And thank you for accepting our interview of CIS podcast.
That's always my pleasure.
Thank you very much. Enjoying sure. the rest of the time here.
Thank you.
Thank you to all our guests for their thoughtful insights. Today's discussion reminds us that while differences between China and the U.S. exist, there is still ample room for cooperation, no matter in education, cultural, technology, or youth exchanges. This conversation shows that while differences still persist, there is still meaningful space where cooperation can grow, especially when people from both countries continue to talk, meet, and work together. Thank you for listening, and we hope you will join us again for the next episode of the CISS podcast.